everyone. Welcome back to Relax with Animal Facts. I am Steph Wolf, and today I am going to be learning with you about our furry, scaly, or possibly even slimy friends. And in today's case, it is definitely going to be a slimy friend of ours, because we are covering the oh-so-wonderful Great White Shark. This is a very special listener episode dedicated to Scott and Alyssa, or maybe Annalisa, Eleanor, Antoinette, Remy, Linda, Sarah, Jude Rogers, and Sarah Rogers, Elliot, and Annie. I hope all of you enjoy your very own episode. You guys can also thank those of our Animal Podcast family who voted for this episode on Patreon. If you are not already on Patreon, you can vote for new episodes once a month. You can get all of the episodes completely intro-free and get access to exclusive series like Mythical Animals and Extinct Animals, all for $1 a month. So if you want to support the show's mission, you can go to patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts. A shout out to George Flad, who has provided all of the animal ambiances that we use on the show. His work is linked in the description, and I encourage you to check him out. And now let us begin to wind down a little bit. If you are new here, I welcome you with open arms to our Animal Podcast family, and am excited for our first adventure together. And if you are returning, you know exactly what I am going to be asking of you. I have three primary exhortations for you. The first is that you put on some flippers and scuba gear. We are definitely going to be needing that for where we are going today. My second encouragement to you is perhaps the most important, and it is to realize perhaps where you are carrying some tension and to do your best to let that go. For some of you, that might be the head, the neck, it might be the legs. Maybe you actually don't know where you carry tension. Well, you can find out if you start from the bottom of your feet mentally and just work your way up past the ankles, the knees, going up and up, kind of just relaxing as you go. Our goal on this podcast is to become Jell-O and to do your best to do an award-winning impression, one that is capable of ripping away yet another Oscar from Leonardo DiCaprio's cold hands. My last exhortation to you is to give your mind permission to wander and journey with me as we go into the salty waters of Australia, where the great white shark resides. Welcome back, everyone, to the temperate waters of Australia. I am convinced that at some point during the past, a bunch of Aussies got together and did a big animal heist. They basically scrambled all over the world, gathering all of the world's coolest animals and distributing them all around Australia. The exact details of this plot I am still working out. But I have seen how an Aussie can get when I say Melbourne instead of Melbourne, and so I don't think it is that far-fetched. But here we are, all of us joining our Animal Podcast family that is currently living in Australia and going to those temperate and warm waters. The great white shark, however, is not exclusively found here, but it is also found in the waters of South Africa and other temperate and tropical coastal waters all over the world. The places in which the great white lives can depend on their age. The younger ones, like the pups and the juveniles, are going to be found in more coastal and estuary habitats. The word estuary is just a tidal mouth of a large river, basically where the stream meets the tide. And then the adults will tend to live farther out in the sea or in the open ocean. This is not exclusively the case, however, because fully formed and huge adults will also cruise shorelines in search for particular prey, maybe seals or sea lions. So although they can be found all over, they are typically associated with Australia, which is why we are back here again. The name Great White Shark is its common name. Its scientific name is Carcharodon carcharias. That is quite the scientific name. And its genus, Carcharodon, is derived from the Greek word karkaros, which means sharpen, and odous, which means teeth. That first part of their name means something like sharp tooth. And the latter word, carcharias, comes also from the Greek, and it means point or a type of shark. This is what contributed to the common name of this creature in Australia, the white pointer. And so it is. Although I imagine it's something more like the white pointer. That felt pretty good. This creature can live up to 70 years of age. It is a carnivorous creature, meaning it eats exclusively animal material. It is not going to bother with broccoli or sea algae or any other kind of vegetable. They just want the meat. It can grow up to 21 feet long, weighing up to 4,500 pounds. That's just under 2,050 kilograms at over 640 centimeters. I think that we can all see why they are called the Great White Shark. In fact, they are the world's largest predatory fish. That is among all the other sharks, like poor beagle sharks, salmon sharks, mako sharks. So it is bigger than all of the sharks in its family, the Lamniidae family, and it is also bigger than all the other predatory fish. This creature is a kind of mackerel shark, and the part of their name, the Great White, refers to their white underbellies. Their topsides, however, are not snow white, but rather come in different shades of brown and gray. This coloration might seem random or kind of inconsequential, but on the contrary, it provides some serious countershading. This is basically a kind of camouflage. This animal mechanism describes the stark contrast between colorations that allow animals to blend in with their surroundings. With that white underbelly, fish that are looking up at the Great White are kind of confused. With the sun's rays striking the water surface, the bright white underbelly of the Great White blends them into that painting, making it really difficult to discern that there is a big shark above them. With the darker brownish or grayish colors from the topside, animals that are looking down onto the shark will have a harder time discerning what they are. That is because, of course, there is less light near the bottom of the sea, and so whether you are looking from the top or the bottom, the Great White Shark is difficult to spot out. And remember that this is a form of camouflage known as countershading. And one really cool fact that we may not have been able to discover earlier is that there are special cells on the skin of the shark called melanocytes. These allow the fearsome predator to change their coloration to be slightly lighter or darker. So that would mean being even more camouflaged into the lighter water surface, or even darker to match the deep sea floor. I think we can call this something like a cloaking ability. This has only recently been discovered by scientists, so that is awesome. In addition to being the world's largest predatory fish, they happen to also be one of the quickest. Their bodies are built for hunting and for speed, being shaped like a torpedo equipped with a powerful tail fin. This means their huge, more than 4,000-pound body can go at upwards of 35 miles an hour, about 50 kilometers an hour. They also have a bite force of up to 1.8 metric tons. That's just under 4,000 pounds of force that goes through their jaws. Now, there are those who are quite afraid of sharks. And like I have said to one of you guys before, a little bit of fear, I think, is okay. I think of it quite natural to have a little bit of fear when we are talking about such awesome creatures. I have some fear of the elephant. They could stomp me if they wanted to. That doesn't mean I'm not going to be in awe and wonder of them, but that it will stir in me a greater respect for their capabilities. If you think about the shark as just a very well-built machine, one that is built for a particular purpose in its environment, I think you'd be more likely to view the shark from its merit rather than that which it can do to humans. And the same goes for spiders and for snakes. They are a cause of fear for so many, and to a degree, that's fine. But each species is its own incredible machine that we can never recreate. Every animal is beautiful in its own right. But let's move on with the great white shark. Let's talk about their teeth, which is one of the coolest things about them. They have 7 rows of serrated 2.5-inch long teeth. These 7 rows will make up about 300 teeth in total, though not all of them are often used for chewing. So instead of just having 1 row of pointy teeth, they have these serrated teeth that act like a cutting conveyor belt. And it doesn't even matter if some of the teeth come off of their 7 rows, because they will keep growing new teeth as long as they live. Their teeth, however, are not the only tool that they have under their belt, or in this case, the only tool under their snout. Beneath the shark's snout are its nostrils. This allows them to actually smell underwater. These nostrils are connected to an olfactory bulb, which is an organ that allows them to detect smells all across the water. And just for reference, there is a great amount of variation in the sensitivity of a shark's olfactory bulb, depending on what the chemical is that they are sensing and on the species of shark. All shark species will typically detect smells at 1 part per 25 million or 1 part per 10 billion. It is also worth mentioning that it is a myth that sharks can smell a single drop of blood from a mile away. It is actually not true. But I can see why this was said in the past, because they have really sensitive smelling organs. But the tools they have that make them one of the best hunters in the sea keep on going. In addition to their very sensitive sense of smell, they also have a mechanism known as electroreception. That is pretty much exactly what it sounds like. They have sensory organs that allow them to track electric fields that are generated by both objects and animals that are in the water. These electroreceptors allow them to sense prey from incredible distances, even locating animals that are hiding between rocks or maybe buried beneath the sand. So far, we have an animal that has a conveyor belt of teeth, extremely sensitive smelling organs, and a way of detecting electrical impulses in the water. And so I don't think I could make a more suitable predator for the sea if I tried. Pair all of these things with excellent eyesight, it is actually a myth that they have bad eyes, and you have the apex of predation. I think it would be fair to assume that the great white has bad eyesight. We have found many times on the show that when a creature has, say, really good smell or sense for vibration, they will typically have not very good eyesight. Animals have a way of being quite balanced with their advantages and disadvantages, but the great white shark says, "None of this applies to me. I am good in everything." Well, maybe not in walking, but you guys know what I mean. The great white has huge dark blue eyes that have retinas that adjust well to both day and night. They can most certainly see better than we can, even in dim lighting or murky water. What makes the great white shark for me is that they are very inquisitive. Perhaps unintuitively, they are extremely inquisitive animals that do many things just out of curiosity. If there is just a small piece of debris that is floating in the water, they will swim over and check it out. If they want to poke at something or move something around, their jaws are actually unattached by any bony attachment and are retractable, pretty similar to how a cat can retract its claws. The teeth that line those 7 rows in their mouth are very sensitive, as they are equipped with sensitive nerve cells, and they are also equipped with about 10 to 15 degrees of flexibility. What this means is that the great white can place something into its mouth and feel it like me and you feel with our hands. The only problem with being so curious is that the way you feel things or the way you exercise that curiosity ends up with the thing you are trying to feel being completely destroyed. This is the equivalent of a golden retriever covered with spikes. And so it may not even be interested in eating or harming something, but by exploring their curiosity, they end up doing just that. When a great white shark is young, and maybe a little white shark, they feed on smaller prey like fish and rays. But as they get bigger and bigger, they will start to take on animals like seals, sea lions, and even small whales. In order to hunt, they take advantage of that dual coloration that they have, which again forms the mechanism of counter shading. And so they will position themselves just underneath their prey, blending their darker gray or brownish topside with the darker seafloor, and then quickly, with their remarkable speed, dart upwards and grab their prey. This is why, in many documentaries that feature sharks, you can see them leaping out of the water. You can know that almost certainly, when it has breached the water again, it has prey in its mouth. Great whites have also been known to engage in scavenging behaviors, consuming prey that has already died. They will pass by a carcass of a whale, for example, and kind of carve out choice pieces as they go. In terms of making new pups or baby great white sharks, it can be quite the process. It is estimated that females cannot even begin reproducing until they are at least 30 years of age. That is quite old in relation to many other creatures we have covered. Sharks give birth to live young, something known as live birth, and they will do this every 2 to 3 years. The live young will typically be between 2 and 17, and when they are born, between 4 and 6 feet long. A brand new great white shark can be taller than a person who is fully grown, and when a new pup enters the world, they are capable of surviving for themselves, intuitively navigating the world around them, eating and growing around 12 inches a single year for the first 5 to 6 years of life. And now let's move on to the name of the creature. What does it mean, or where does it come from? Well, because we can kind of intuitively know what great and white is for, and so why don't we just cover where the word shark comes from? The word shark that we have been using to describe the large, voracious fish was coined as early as maybe the 15th century. This word is of an uncertain origin. How the Greeks referred to sharks is nowhere near how we refer to them. But the word shark was used to describe a dishonest person who preys on others, basically a swindler. It is possible this word came from German, schork, basically meaning a scoundrel or a villain. This goes back even further to a Middle High German word which means to poke or to stir. And so we can't say for sure, but this is the reality of language. It's messy, but it's beautiful. So where does the name shark come from? I don't know. And now let me ruin your day by telling a fantastic dad joke. Check this out. How did the hammerhead do on his test? He nailed it. Now that both of our spirits are a little crushed, let us move on to the review of the episode. Airman Mom is writing all the way from the United States of America, and Airman writes, "Your podcast is one of my favorites. Not only do you share countless facts, your presentation is so unique. Well done. P.S. Your dad jokes are the whipped cream on an ice cream sundae. A must. Thank you, Airman, for your wonderful review. I always saw the dad jokes as the vinegar on the ice cream sundae. I'm not sure why everyone wants to keep eating it, including myself, but we do. But thank you, Airman, for the kind words. If there is anything that we can say about the show, it is that it is unique. Probably because we have the best community of any podcast ever. You guys put other audiences to shame. If the show helps you at all and you have just a couple of minutes, I encourage you to leave a review like Airman did. It helps to get more of us together, it helps the show grow, and all around it's just a great idea. If you have already reviewed the show, consider subscribing or following or sharing it with a friend. All of those things are great, and the more adventurers we have, the better. If you would like to request an animal for a future episode, you can do so by going to relaxwithanimalfacts.com and going to the Submit and Animal Request tabs. If you would like to reach out to me, Steph Wolf, for any other reason, you can do so by sending a message to relaxwithanimalfacts@gmail.com or by going to the Instagram relaxwithanimalfacts and sending a message there. For voting on episodes, exclusive episodes, and more, you can go to patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts. A huge shout out to George Vlad for the ambiances used in today's episode. His sound work is in the description, and I encourage you all to check him out. The facts used in this episode came from nationalgeographic.com, natgeokids.com, usa.oceana.org, worldwildlife.org, atozanimals.com, and etimonline.com. What an amazing creature we have learned about today. Perhaps one of the most well-designed creatures in its environment. Its speed, its anatomy, its physiology, all of these things make for one fearsome predator. Thank you so much for joining me on this adventure, and I look forward to our next adventure together with the next animal. Take care.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.